These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I thought we did a good job of fighting back. It was a 5-point game with 3:20 to play. That's like anybody's game. And then we lost our composure down the stretch, you know, whether it was poor execution, turnovers, the technical, you know. And, you know, I got to take some responsibility in that and try and get us better organized and get us, you know, a little slowed down, a little calmed down.
And welcome into a Reckless Speculation Thursday. Phil out traveling, so it is to set the lineup for you. Zolgad, executive producer Declan Goff, and the star of Reckless Speculation Thursday, our guy Darren.
Reckless Speculation.
Channel 5 Eyewitness News, and of course, the Scoop Podcast. And Darren, let's start with the Wolves, okay? So I went last night again. More enjoyable than the Magic game, but still disappointing. I have a question for you that will dovetail into Reckless Speculation. And I think on the Bonus Scoop on Tuesday, I think you broached this. I think you brought this up. And I, at the time, we discussed it very briefly. But I wanna get at the heart of this. What do you think Sachin Gupta's appetite for and phone calls are for when it comes to possibly trying to bring in a power forward here? Because there, I mean, God bless him. And he got off to a great start in the second half last night. But, like, they're playing Okogie. Like, they're desperately trying to piece together guys to play there. What do you think the priority is for 2021-22 trying to get some help there?
By the way, on Okogie, who I enjoy, he is a bright young man. I thoroughly enjoy talking to Josh. But going back to media day, Judd, he was pretty much saying he can't wait until the opposition leaves him open, that he has spent all this time on his shot, that he is salivating at the thought of getting open looks. Unfortunately, Josh Okogie is the shooter he always has been. He will have a long NBA career because he can be a plus defender. He is never, ever, I don't think, and I hate to, you know, just write the obituary on his shooting at, what, 22 years old? But unless he gets with the right shooting coach, that shot needs so much work. Like, it's hard to ever see him even being an average shooter. Now, as far as Sachin Gupta goes, I was with Sachin for about 30 minutes last Friday. We talked on camera for a bit. That's on the last Scoop Podcast, episode 370. We also talked off camera. He said he certainly has reached out to a number of teams, including teams where he just doesn't have a great relationship with. Like, we know him and Daryl Morey have a really good relationship from their time together in Houston. He has a good relationship with Raphael Stone, who currently runs the Rockets. Remember, Raphael tried to bring Sachin down to Houston a few months ago. That's when Gersan Rosas blocked that move. Gupta has people he has worked with in Philly, in Detroit. They are spread out across the league. So those relationships already established. But there are a lot of people running front offices or are, you know, number two, number three in a front office that he just doesn't have a good relationship with. So he told me he has reached out, Judd, to a number of those folks. But it's more just, hey, you know, good to meet you. You know, hey, where are things at with you? No real deep, you know, go down the rabbit hole type trade talks. He just told me, like, it just doesn't happen this time of the year. Yeah, some Ben Simmons inquiries, but other than that, it just doesn't happen until Thanksgiving time, December, maybe closer to Christmas, after 20-something games. But he realizes they are the smallest roster in the NBA. He realizes the roster has warts. He realizes that you look at the two forward positions, you can make a case that Jaden McDaniels should be coming off the bench. Certainly, whether it's Jared Vanderbilt, Josh Okogie, those guys are probably guys that come off the bench, that they could use two starters, that you feel good about three-fifths of the starting lineup. D'Lo, when he's healthy, that should not be a long-term injury, but he may not play tomorrow, didn't play last night. They clearly missed his shot-making ability last night. But, okay, you feel okay at least about Russell, although remember, that was Gersan's guy, not necessarily Sutchin's guy. I'm not thoroughly convinced that Sutchin would have made that exact trade. But nonetheless, if you're Sutchin right now, you feel okay. Okay, D'Lo at one starting spot, Anthony Edwards at another, Karl Anthony Towns at the five. But you realize you need two capable starting forwards if you are to really make any sort of, you know, jump up this year, which is the expectation externally and internally. And I still, Judd, even after last night, that was the old Wolves, right? That you see a team score 40-something points in a quarter. Also Orlando in the fourth quarter on Monday. Like, there are teams, bad defensive teams, that might only give up like 5, 6, 7 40-point quarters in an entire season. Now in back-to-back games, the Wolves, by the way, entering last night, the number 3 total defense, but they gave up a 40-point quarter on Monday. They gave up a 40-point quarter last night. This is the old Wolves, right? That's the old Wolves defense. But I still think there is a logical path. I don't feel any differently, even after last night's game, about their chances of being a top 10 seed. But, like, I don't think this is a 42-win team, a 44-win team. I never did. I thought, yes, over the Vegas over-under of 34.5, but more like 36 wins, 37 wins. So that still means that you're losing, in some ways, many more games than you're winning. If you finish with 36 wins, that means you have, what, 44 losses? So you have 8 more losses than wins. To me, that's a sizable amount. So this is still a roster that needs a ton of work. I am positive, Judd, that Sutchin is going to make a move at some point. I feel more convinced of that after spending time with him on Friday than before. And I would have told you before, I think he eventually makes a move. But it might be closer to the trade deadline, not like in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Doogie, what do you also just think it would cost to get that? I mean, obviously, the Wolves have traded away multiple first-round picks. You know, just trying to figure out matching salary. Malik Beasley hasn't looked strong in the first few games, but he makes a hefty price. Like, what would be the return that Minnesota would have to get maybe like a Miles Turner or someone of equivalent nature that's a power forward that could step in that could help this team?
I mean, I love Miles. I told you guys last week that there are Miles Turner fans in the Wolves front office. You know, unfortunately for the Wolves, Indiana is playing a little bit better. Caris LeVert is back. So I don't think Indiana is trading Miles Turner anytime real soon. Maybe in February, but not right now. But to get somebody of that caliber, I mean, you're looking at expiring contracts. I mean, Jake Layman is an expiring contract. Torian Prince is an expiring contract. If you wanted to move Patrick Beverley, it's not like they're married to him, although they really like his impact, especially, you know, locker room from a leadership standpoint. But if you have to move Patrick Beverley as an expiring contract, you would. Leandro Bolmaro is an interesting trade chip. I don't think he's going to play a whole lot here, but look at what he did last Friday for the Iowa Wolves against the G League team, the Ignite, with a number of NBA scouts in attendance in Des Moines, including the entire Wolves front office. The Wolves had scouting meetings in town late last week. They took a bus down there. There were like 14, 15 people from the Wolves front office, including Gupta, that were in Des Moines on Friday night, last Friday, to watch the Iowa Wolves against the G League and not Ignite. The Ignite have a number of 2022 first-round draft picks on their roster. So there were a number of NBA scouts in the building. The best player on the floor last Friday was Leandro Bolmaro. So if you wanted to use Bolmaro as, you know, a sweetener, you know, certainly Jaden McDaniels has value across the league. You know, so to get somebody of Turner's ilk, it's expiring contracts, and it's likely a combination or both McDaniels, Bolmaro, possibly a future first-round pick.
Dukes, does Malik Beasley fit on this team? And I know he can shoot, and when he gets hot, it's great. But it seems to me that coming off the bench, he's intent on jacking up his shots. Last night, he made a bunch against the Magic. He did not. But does he ultimately fit what Chris Finch wants to do, or is he a logical guy to be traded? He strikes me as a guy who could be very successful on a team that is not so great, but can start him. I don't know if bringing him off the bench is an ideal fit for his personality, I guess is the best way to put it.
And it's a reasonable contract. I mean, he's making the same amount of money as Doug McDermott in San Antonio. You've got that team option for
Dougie
a few
buckets,
years
baby.
From now. Dougie buckets.
Love that nickname.
Yeah. In fact, I think his dad or somebody from his dad's staff was up here the other day doing some recruiting, still doing a good job there at Creighton. But yeah, I mean, it's a reasonable contract. He's got his limitations, especially on the defensive end. But yeah, can he help the Wolves? Can he help some other team? He certainly can. Right. I think he benefits from playing with Patrick Beverley. So, it's the trickle-down effect of no Russell last night. Beverley moves into the starting lineup. So then the rotations are staggered from that standpoint. So, I think the more minutes he can play with Beverley, somebody that will look to get him open looks more so than others, I think that is a plus for Malik. But yeah, I think there's certainly a role for Malik, but I also think he's pressing at times too, feeling like, okay, I'm coming off the bench. I need to be,
right.
For lack of a better comparison, I need to be, this version, this team's version of the microwave, right? Like, I need to come in. I need to cook. Like I need to score. And so I think he's forcing some of the 3-point shots. I was encouraged. He did have one drive to the basket last night that resulted in a layup or, a bit of a head fake and drove by the defender. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. The Wolves just don't have a lot of that. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I think there's a role for Malik here, but they're not married to him, right? They're married to two guys. Like it would take, for them to move Anthony Edwards or Karl-Anthony Towns, whether it's Giannis or, somebody, top five caliber in the league. I mean, those guys are pretty much untouchable. Otherwise, anybody's on the table. So if Philadelphia at some point changes its mind and says, yeah, okay, let's build something around, Jaden McDaniels, Malik Beasley, the Wolves would happily move Malik. But for the time being, yeah, I do think he can help this team win some games.
Doogie, with Jaden McDaniels so far, through 7 games, I saw this stat floating around, I think going into game 4 of the season. But through 7 games, Jaden McDaniels has scored 26 points and also has 25 fouls. So he has scored as many points as he's had fouls this season. And I know his shot isn't going in as much. They've wanted him to be that corner 3 guy, the 3-and-D guy, but is there a way that he can finally start scoring more points? Or is his, I know his prominent is defense. He's going to be a defensive guy. He's a damn good defensive player. I feel like he is so tall and lanky that he could literally touch the moon just by putting his hands all the way up. Where is Jaden McDaniels trying to find his offensive game? Because, I mean, he's playing 27 minutes a night, but for a guy that's shooting basically 22% from three and well under 40% from the field overall, I mean, I got to imagine eventually he's going to have to start finding more of his game offensively to balance out his great defense that he brings.
Well, then they need to run some plays for him, Declan. I mean, so often he's just standing in the corner waiting for the ball to take that corner three, which is the best shot on the court. But we saw it in summer league. He is capable of putting the ball on the floor. So I think that's on Finch and Mike Anori and some others to run some plays for him. But he's low down that totem pole, right? Like you're not going to run a whole lot of action for him, but I wouldn't mind seeing what he could do with that opportunity. The defense doesn't bother me. I mean, oftentimes he's guarding, whether, it's Brandon Ingram, the other team's best wing player so often, the fouls don't bug me, but I get where you're coming from that. I do think there's more there in terms of what he can do on the offensive end. And so it's on Finch to unlock that.
2 of 3 last night. He started. He played 28, 45, and 2 of 3 in the entire game. And the problem, I think, Dugs, last night was this. So to your point, D'Lo is out, didn't play. And because of that, the Clippers felt perfectly comfortable and were probably justified. They were doubling Towns before he got the ball, and they were basically daring the rest of the Wolves to shoot, and they didn't, and they couldn't shoot straight. And meanwhile, the Clippers from the field, 60.3%. So I guess the question is, when D'Lo does not play, and he's going to miss games, like there's no doubt about that.
Although it's short term, like I don't think But yeah, I don't think we're going to be talking 3 weeks from now and he's still out. But yes.
No, but I'm saying he's going to get hurt. He's going to miss some games.
Oh, yeah. Durability's been an issue with him for years. Yeah.
So the question goes back to what are the Wolves going to do as far as being able to competently knock down shots to take that pressure off of Towns? Because if they can't, the games that he doesn't play in, they're in trouble. Because to your point, you know, Okogie made some shots but can't. McDaniels does not shoot. Pat Bev, 4 of 6. You know, that's fine, but it's 6 shots. So I think that becomes the question, and it does appear that that's going to be a conundrum in games that D'Lo does not participate in.
Well, and think about late in last night's game, Jared Vanderbilt taking a 3-pointer. I know Jared has worked on his shot.
Not good.
And heck, they had a chance in the fourth quarter last night in large part because of his tenacity, his energy, his compete level. But yep. Jared Vanderbilt should never, ever shoot a 3-pointer. Not at this point. Maybe in a couple of years, but not right now. But L.A. baited the Wolves, Jared, into that shot. It's
only
on Malik.
Shot, two Dukes.
Yeah, it's on Malik. I'd like to see Jalen Noel play more. So that's something I would look at. I'm open to giving Bol Morrow a chance. Not that, you know, he's going to be this elite, you know, outside shooter.
Right.
You know, but I'm open to those ideas. But yeah, I think it circles back to our Malik discussion that Malik has to give them more. And also on the defense last night, like they've been really good defensively, but there were some rotation issues last night. I mean, even on it's a 5-point game, you know, 2:50 to go. Nick Batum makes that three. If you noticed, now Cat got out there and got his hand up, got his arm up, but it was a late rotation. They were really late on a lot of rotations last night. It looked to me like there were some defensive breakdowns. So it'll be an interesting chess match as they get back on the practice court this afternoon. What adjustments are made heading into tomorrow night's game against the Clippers?
Yeah, and I think off of that point, Doogie, I think what happened was so that the defense looked really pretty solid for what, 3-4 games. It looked good. And I think teams got film of what the Wolves were doing and adjusted themselves. And so now the question is, what can Finch and his staff do to adjust to that? Because what made them good in the first few games defensively, I think has been basically deducted. And so now they're going to have to adjust to what teams have done. But again, 60.3% from the field, and Paul George and Reggie Jackson were phenomenal. What, 32 points for George last night, 29 for Jackson. So, yeah, it's going to be a work in progress. You're right in saying this. I think this team is more compelling to watch. Like, it's more fun. It's not the typical, oh, man, they're just crap team, which unfortunately Wolves fans go back to very quickly in this town when they do lose games. But the thing now is it's going to be a transitional period, and they definitely do need help. Like they need to, if they want to compete for what you're talking about, they probably need to make at least one fairly significant trade.
Yes, but they do have those expiring contracts as intriguing trade pieces. That's why I'm pretty convinced Sutton is going to do something eventually. I just don't think it's going to be immediately, because, you know, the old saying, it takes two to tango. I think he'd love to do something real soon, but the opportunity just, it's not going to present itself. But eventually, will it? Yeah, I'm pretty convinced it will. The other thing, Judd, last night was a reminder of, we shouldn't be fixating on that Clippers 1-3 start. They'll get back Serge Ibaka soon. They'll get back Marcus Morris soon. Maybe Kawhi in March, late March, early April, but regardless, the Clippers are a playoff team. Like, for a little bit, I was wondering, okay, you know, as we try to come up with 10 teams in the Western Conference, you know, where do the Clippers fit in? Can the Wolves maybe be above the Clippers?
Right.
Probably not. Ty Lue is a really good coach, too.
Yep. The one good thing last night, Ant driving to the basket. Mm-hmm. So they, in fact, Finch talked about this post game. In the Magic game, it was obvious, like, he was shooting from the outside, and it's like, Ant, come on, man. Last night, he was, I want to say in the first half, the stat I heard was he was 6-for-6 driving to the basket. Now, his shooting from the field last night, 3 of 10 on threes and 11 of 21 from the field. But what we saw last night has to be the blueprint. I don't mind if he shoots from the outside, but if he's going to be as effective as he could possibly be, he has to go to the basket. And when he does, I feel it changes things dramatically.
Yeah, and I think 10 three-pointers is probably a little too aggressive. Mm-hmm. That's just a bit too much. Then of the 11 two-point shots he took, I think a couple were long two-point shots. Okay, let's eliminate those long two-point shots. But yeah, you feel pretty confident about him, whether you know he finishes at the rim or gets fouled. Yeah, he's going to miss on occasion near the rim. But yeah, like especially when it's Nick Batum on him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, with his eyes closed, he can get to the basket on Nick Batum. So when the opportunity, when the matchup presents itself, I'm with you. That was the recipe, you know, for Ant last night that I want to see more often than not moving forward.
Doogie, there is some crazy reckless speculation this morning.
Reckless speculation.
Because Carl Anthony Towns apparently liked a tweet from a fan who said, you need to hashtag free Cat. And Cat liked the tweet. NBA Central, a great Twitter aggregator, picked it up. Oh, what does it all mean? You know, the classic Stefon Diggs. Why is he tweeting this? But then Cat, 8 minutes ago, and as we're recording this at 9:57 on a Thursday, just tweeted out, just changed my password, and we're solid on here now. So I think that goes to say that maybe he didn't like that tweet, and he had to also put out the other tweet saying that I changed my password. So don't worry.
I got hacked.
I got hacked.
They called him. Finch is like, what are you doing?
But regardless, in the pie chart of was did he actually like it? Was he hacked? What is the amount of shots to that Carl Anthony Towns needs to take? What he had like 14 the other night, which was obviously far too low. Malik Beasley was taking the same amount of shots. Do you feel like Cat also they need to put the cat in ball? The ball needs to be in Cat's hands more for this team to win more games, or is it just kind of difficult to do when you basically have Anthony Edwards taking shots, Cat taking shots, D'Lo taking shots? It's kind of hard to just assume that Cat can still get up to 20 to 25 shots every night.
I'd like to see him more around the perimeter, top of the key. I mean, down low, I mean, Judd, you mentioned it. I mean, the Clippers were swarming him. Remember, he lost all that weight too. So, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he's not a 260, 265 anymore, you know, to absorb a lot of that beating. You know, Zubac, you know, I mean, that's a big boy on the Clippers. So, I mean, he's going to get beat up again tomorrow night. So I wouldn't mind Cat initiating things more top of the key. And if the shot presents itself, I'm fine with him taking any shot, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's transformational in that regard, you know, being the size he is at 7 feet with the shot that he has. But I certainly don't want him forcing it, and I don't want him forcing it when – I mean, heck, there were times last night where there were three Clippers swarming him. Yeah. You know, so I don't want him forcing shots. In terms of him liking the tweet, free Cat, I mean, heck, you know, I took some heat, was it like 18 months ago, 2 years ago, you know, on this segment where I said, hey, a high-ranking NBA official, you know, told me it's, you know, pretty much when, not if,
yeah,
you know, Cat is gone. I mean, it's not like he's ever gone to them and said, hey, trade me. Mm-hmm. But do I have the sense that he has thought about it and even communicated such a thing to some people, you know, especially maybe some people that used to work for the Wolves, that he's at least wondered aloud about what the future could hold, whether, you know, here it being bleak or maybe it being better elsewhere? Yeah, I think it's come up. But make no mistake about this. He is not close to asking out. He wants to win here. He does feel forever indebted to the Saunders family, which still has an ownership stake in the franchise that Flip took a chance on him, the late Flip Saunders, that he wants to make it work here. And he's heard all the heat. One All-NBA appearance in 6 years. This is year seven. Only one playoff appearance. And he's heard the chatter. You made the playoffs because of Jimmy Butler. So he wants to erase at least some of that narrative and lead this franchise, not the New York Knicks or the Boston Celtics or the Phoenix Suns or you name the Dallas Mavericks would have trade interest. A number of teams would have trade interest if it ever got to that point. But he don't want to lead. Yeah, maybe one day lead that franchise to the playoffs, deep into the playoffs. But more than anything, He wants to lead the Minnesota Timberwolves to the playoffs.
I think you're right there, Dukes. And I think this, he's probably, because he's a smart dude. He's probably very curious and rightfully so about what the transition from Glenn to A-Rod and Laurie is going to mean as well. Because I do think the change in ownership here eventually is going to change things. I mean, Mark's at all the games. He's courtside. He's young. He's rich. I think he is clearly Doogie absorbing this all. And I think he's enjoying it. And I think it's fun because it's a new toy. But he's also a really smart guy. And he's going to watch this thing and be like, I mean, I'm sorry, but I've been to like four games now, okay? Target Center in 2021 doesn't work. Like just that alone.
I mean, I'll be there tomorrow night. I look forward to seeing it. Yeah.
By the press table, which is in the corner by the Wolves bench and goes up now, like you literally have players who have to watch the game from, and I don't care, but from in front of us because the bench runs out essentially. And then guys have to ride a bike right by us and come back and have conversations that we can hear. Like it's all of those things. And I know the fans will be like, who cares, Judd? Are you inconvenienced, Judd? You're stupid. But here's the difference now. Laurie knows, and Cuban is the guy I think who started this. Players look at that and they're like, are you serious? I gotta ride a bike right by the press. Like, come on. I need to have this. I need to have that. So if Cat's smart, I think he is probably saying within the next, what, Dukes, 2 to 5 years, like it'll be a transition, but things will start to change drastically again. And that's where I think we'll cross from same old Wolves to this feels different, very much like what the Vikings went through eventually from McCombs to the Wilfs. Like Red ran that thing on the cheap.
Mike Tice stories, he can tell you. I've talked to Mike so many times. I mean, trying to get a new air conditioning system installed in the locker room. It was going to be like $200,000. And Red said, nope.
Yep.
You know, having to hire an offensive coordinator for $250,000 a year.
Steve Loney had to coach the offensive line, too. They once had a defensive back make a play during practice and fly into the woods. And he tripped on like a tree trunk thing. So, like, but that's where the Wolves are going to change. That's where I think we're going to see a team that becomes far more professional and less ma and pa throwback.
Yes. And, like, does anybody really think? I mean, yes, and all the stuff you described about, you know, players, the exercise bike, and, you know, our media seats being so close, being able to hear all those conversations. But it goes way, way deeper than that. Does anybody really think that Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez aren't going to pursue a new arena in, I don't have the exact definitive time frame, but yeah, somewhere in that 2 to 5 year window. Like, I don't think we're going to be sitting here 5 years from now, November of 2026, you know, wondering if Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez want a new arena. I'm pretty sure we'll know by November of 2026. Target Center is a bottom five arena. Talk to a number of people in the league. Brian Windhorst has been on the record suggesting that. He's been to every setup, but it's others that I know well. They will tell you. It's not a crap arena, but compared to the other ones, it's bottom. It's like bottom of the barrel. So Mark and Alex aren't idiots. Of course, they are going to pursue a new arena. But for the time being, Judd, let's not forget, Glenn Taylor is still in charge. That's why I think Sachin Gupta has a realistic chance to maintain the position of final decision maker, that it's just hard for me to see Glenn wanting to spend a ridiculous amount of money. Now, I do think Mark Laurie had interest in Masai Ujiri before, you know, he signed that new deal up in Toronto. So that dynamic to me will be fascinating to unearth, you know, more so behind the scenes, but, you know, how much influence Mark can have with Glenn. But ultimately, it'll be Glenn, not Mark, cutting those checks. So I don't think they want to spend millions upon millions of dollars, for example, to bring a president of operations in. So you could just give Sachin Gupta a new deal and save some money that way.
PJ Fleck, I think, not shocking, but the timing was a little bit surprising. They announced yesterday that he gets another 7-year contract extension. If that sounds familiar, it's because he got a 7-year extension during the 2019 season in which the Gophers won 11 games. Do we think that there was for sure a program that was going to pursue him after 2021, or was this just a preemptive move to stop all talk of him possibly taking a job elsewhere?
More immediately, the latter, but the former, maybe eventually. Like, as the dominoes start to fall, James Franklin, for example, goes Penn State, hypothetically, Penn State to USC, then the Penn State job is open. Yeah, I think it was inevitable that PJ's name was going to come up. I also add that he's a very shrewd agent, Kevin Harlan's brother, Brian Harlan, that Brian knows how to play the game. Mm-hmm. So Brian certainly can be proactive, hop on the phone. He's got the phone numbers of all these athletic directors. He can make it known that, hey, my client PJ Fleck would be interested in you name the job. But now, yeah, we don't have to worry about that. Brian is based in Chicago. He was at the game over the weekend in Evanston. I guess the light bulb should have gone off because, remember, it was November of 2019, 2 years ago, you know, after they beat Penn State. It was soon thereafter Fleck got that initial 7-year extension. So it was November of 2019, now November of 2021. So if my memory had served me right, it would have dawned on me that, you know, back in November of 19, you know, things were kind of wrapped up by the time the Gophers got to Evanston. But, like, it should have dawned on me that Brian Harlan, there in the Chicago area, later Saturday afternoon game, Mark Coyle on the trip. Okay, did Mark have breakfast with Brian Saturday morning, or did they gather for dinner on Friday night? I should have connected those logical dots that Mark and Brian were going to see each other over the weekend, that this seemingly was going to happen at some point. Yeah, maybe I would have thought more so after, you know, National Signing Day, but maybe they wanted to get it done before this December National Signing Day. But nonetheless, I think PJ's being genuine that he wants to be here for a really long time. Now, if Notre Dame comes calling in 4 or 5 years, okay, we can have a different discussion. But, like, I don't think he was ever going to Knoxville. I don't think he was going to Tennessee a year ago. A couple years ago, I don't think he was going to Tallahassee. Yes, my understanding is Florida State did have some interest, but I still don't think, based on his family dynamic, you know, Heather, you know, co-parents with a man, PJ co-parents with his ex-wife, you know, so the kids oftentimes are here in the Twin Cities, but other times are in different Midwest locations. Like, I just don't think PJ, not that you can't hop on a private jet and be on that jet for an extra hour or 90 minutes to fly to a further away destination, but I just don't think Tallahassee was his jam. I don't think Knoxville was ever his jam. I think it'd be a job in the Midwest. You know, so with his ties to Michigan, if anything ever happens with Jim Harbaugh, or if Mel Tucker in a couple years leaves East Lansing, okay, maybe that would be a program to keep an eye on. I think more so maybe Notre Dame, if you think his shtick could work in South Bend. But I think we're years away from Brian Kelly walking away. So, yeah, for the foreseeable future, PJ Fleck is going to be here. And I do think he's being genuine when he says he really, really likes it here. He has a lot of the resources he needs. Maybe not every single resource, but in terms of the infrastructure, they have added so many bodies, so many employees on the recruiting front. You know, heck, a new graphic designer, some new video people. He's got a general manager. Like, the thought of Jerry Kill 7 years ago having a general manager, I think Jerry would have laughed at that possibility. But PJ Fleck has a general manager. Garrett is a great guy. He's PJ's right-hand man. PJ has so many resources. And now to get his assistants a big raise, think about it. It was 3 years ago today. Remember Rob Smith? Remember the debacle against Illinois, this Saturday's opponent? Illinois puts 55 on the board, ran for like 900 yards. Rob Smith fired soon thereafter. A lot of the things changed here after Rob Smith was gone, Joe Rossi took over. So it's nice to get Joe Rossi even more money.
What does the GM do in college football?
He, like, think about all the social media videos they put out there, you know, like when they gave Derek LeCaptain the scholarship.
Yeah.
You know, and how that idea came about. Like, Garrett helped put that plan in place.
Okay.
Trust me, PJ's very good at being on top of stuff, but Garrett's also on top of that stuff, like, you know, somebody we all know real well, Mark Rosen. You know, Mark's wife, Denise, sadly passes away a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Mark gets all these letters in the mail from the Gopher football team. Yeah, okay. PJ is aware of that because he does have a good relationship with Mark, but Garrett drives that sort of bus, right? A lot of the charitable stuff, you know, things of that ilk, but also helping, you know, on the recruiting front, plenty, you know, recruiting trips, you know, organizing practice schedules and, you know, stuff like that, facility management, you know, the way they travel, you know, just kind of being an overseer of a lot of those things. But, you know, like PJ, you can just tell PJ's on top of a lot of stuff. The reason he's on top of a lot of stuff in large part is that general manager, Garrett.
So I think, Doogie, that PJ Fleck is a perfect fit here. And here's why. If he went to any bigger program, Big Ten or not, his in-game coaching would be scrutinized. And he's a good recruiter. He's got his shtick. Some hate it. Some absolutely love it. It works for him. That's very important.
It's also important, Judd. It works for the kids.
Well, right. But Dukes, here's the point.
Those 18 to 22-year-olds?
Yeah.
You know, he's got them wrapped around his finger in a good way. That's so who good. Cares what you think is a, you know, 50-something-year-old Caucasian male or what right. I think is a 41-year-old right. Caucasian male? It's what those 18 to 22-year-olds think.
Absolutely. But here's the most important thing. He's a bad in-game coach. He's not good. He can't run a clock. His play calling is up and down, and I don't know who's in control. Offensively, I thought he was really good, and the last couple of years have exposed him, and this year's been bad at times. So I think he knows, and he's smart enough to know he has found the perfect fit. Do we talk about his in-game coaching miscues? Absolutely. Is he vilified? Is he scrutinized? Absolutely not. If he ever went to an SEC school, he would be picked apart. If he went to Michigan State, he might be. If he went to Penn State, he would be. And so I think he has found beat because I keep saying, is he learning and improving in-game coaching? And the answer, much like Zim at times, appears to be no. So I actually think Minnesota is the sweet spot. And it's very smart for him to continue to have success and stay here. Because if he took that next step up and all of a sudden there's more media, college football fans, Doogie, I think it would get ugly quick. This is why Minnesota is perfect for him.
Well, I mean, think about if you're Dan Mullen right now, the longtime successful coach, exactly. You know, first at where Mississippi State, you know, helped develop Dak Prescott, some others, transitions to Gainesville, loses first round picks, Kyle Pitts, and Kadarius Toney, loses, what, a third-round pick quarterback, Kyle Trask. Okay, like, sure, you're replacing your quarterback, maybe the best tight end in SEC history, literally, in Kyle Pitts, and a first-round wide receiver. And, yeah, it's been a rough year. And, yeah, Dan Mullen is getting, you know, beaten up on the recruiting front, you know, oftentimes losing kids to Georgia. Oh, God forbid, you're losing – you know, a kid to the number one program in the country. But, like, he is being vilified right now. And they've lost some games. Trust me, they are underachieving in Gainesville. But, yeah, do I think PJ's ready for that sort of scrutiny? Probably not. So, yeah, this program, this town, this market, it's the perfect sweet spot where, yeah, there's some instant analysis after a game on Saturday. But by Sunday, it's all about the Vikings. By Monday, it's oftentimes all about the Vikings. But if you win here, the bandwagon will grow. And if they end up winning on Saturday like they should, there's going to be incredible excitement next week heading into that game November 13th in Iowa City. If you finally beat Iowa, PJ has not beaten Iowa. This is the year. It's time for PJ to beat Iowa. If you beat Iowa on the 13th, you are in prime position to win the Big Ten West, to head to the Big Ten championship game. He was close in 19. Jerry Kill was very close in 14. Now is the time to break through, get to the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis in early December. So the bandwagon will grow for the next few weeks. But yeah, in terms of the scrutiny, like you and I, Judd, now granted the game was on the Pac-12 network, which, you know, pretty much nobody has, but like that debacle at the end of the first half in Boulder. And yes, it was largely overshadowed because they won the game ultimately by 30 points.
Right.
But like that can't happen. And there's been other instances where he is a really good coach Sunday to Saturday morning. But for those 3 hours in game on Saturdays, he has a long way to go. He's not alone. There's a lot of coaches that have clock management issues, that have decision-making in-game issues. But yeah, he is still growing at 41 years old in that regard, or 40, about to turn 41.
Doogie, I was talking with our fellow Gopher resident nerd, Ross Brendel.
Reckless speculation.
And we were speculating.
So he made it back safely from Evanston?
Yes, he did, shockingly. He said he went to a tailgate. Of course, Ross stumbled into, like, also, by the way, some Gopher, I forget, running back. The running back that had to come in at the end of the game after the third running back went out with another injury. I forget who it was who got one of these last touchdowns for the Gophers on Saturday.
Well, the captain. Yeah, I mean, he was a good running back in Wisconsin. They just put him on scholarship this year, but yeah, he came here as, I believe, a linebacker, but he was a good running back in high school. But yeah, that was a really good touchdown run by LeCaptain on Saturday.
Quickly, two things. Number one, Ross was tailgating with his parents that morning, coincidentally.
I believe it, yeah.
But two, the more important thing, if the Gophers actually do run off these wins here, and they get Wisconsin at home on Thanksgiving week, obviously, and that time period is TBD, what is the likelihood, Doogie, of College game day coming back to Minneapolis for the second time in a couple years?
Well, what are the other games on the schedule for November 27th? The thing is, there's a bunch of games that Friday, right? Or at least a few games on Friday the 26th. I don't have the list of games in front of me, Declan. Maybe you can pull it up on November 27th. But yes, if it's a winner-take-all Big Ten West, let's say the Gophers beat Iowa. Let's say Wisconsin. If you look at Wisconsin's schedule, pretty favorable the rest of the way. So if Wisconsin then beats Minnesota on November 27th, they would have that head-to-head tiebreaker. So if they both finish with, say, two Big Ten losses, is Wisconsin right now at two Big Ten losses, so they'd have to run the table. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But put it this way, if that game on November 27th is a winner-take-all, which it has been before, right? 2014 in Madison, let's not forget. Mitch Leidner, Jerry Kill, they were up by two touchdowns in that game, 17-3. Win that game, they win the Big Ten West. I was there at Camp Randall. I'll never forget that game. Okay, they lose that game. 2019, in a position, you beat Wisconsin, you win the Big Ten West. They lost that game. But yes, if they are in a position, you know, and Wisconsin's in a position, winner take all November 27th at Huntington Bank Stadium, Badgers, Gophers. Sure, Declan, it would make some sense for game day to come back here. I know they loved their experience here in 2019, so I could certainly see that scenario unfolding. But I'd like to know if there's like this marquee game, like, you know, does Georgia play? I don't know who. But, you know, is there some like obvious game day game that day? Does Oklahoma play Oklahoma State?
They do.
They do.
Oklahoma
plays Oklahoma State.
So there's no way, now that I'm looking at it, there's no way game day comes here. Ohio State's at Michigan that weekend. Oklahoma's at Oklahoma State that weekend. Bama at Auburn that weekend. I think those four games in general, even with ramifications, probably draw more of a bigger crowd for game day than Badgers and Gophers.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what Michigan State does here, you know, do they play Penn State here pretty quick? But depending on how that shakes out. But if Ohio State, Michigan is for the Big Ten East title, like, how would they not be at Michigan, Ohio State, right? If Buckeyes, Wolverines is for the Big Ten East. But, yeah, I know, you know, just being in the, you know, kind of under that ESPN umbrella, ABC, ESPN, I just know, like, and I don't think they were feeding me a bunch of crap. I think they did really, really enjoy their experience here in 2019. So if it's not November 27th, maybe at some point here in the next couple of years, I can see game day being back here.
Rapid fire scoops, Dukes. Let's wrap her up.
Tomorrow, Friday, is the deadline for the Twins and Alexander Colomate to decide on that mutual option for 2022. I texted with a Twins official on Wednesday. This person told me they are still discussing something. You know, there is some debate about, you know, was last year, this past season, you know, was it more a blip, more a mirage that Colomate is more the reliever we saw, you know, 2015 to 2019, 2020, that 2021 was just this weird pop-up year for Colomate. Like, should we exercise our portion of the option? But then there's enough saying, okay, heck, including one that way back when remembers Rondell White. Remember Rondell White? You know, the Twins exercised an option on Rondell White.
Oh, yeah.
Then he failed miserably. I got was the Twins are moving more toward the, and maybe it's logical, but that they'll decline their portion of the option. So then the question is, what does Colomay do? If he declines his end of the portion, the Twins don't owe him any more money. If he exercises his portion of the option and the Twins decline, the Twins would have to cut him a check for a little over $1 million to go away. So there could be some strategy involved. If you're Colomay's agent trying to read the tea leaves, okay, if we think the Twins are really going to turn it down, or do we just exercise it? And if the Twins happen to exercise it, I think he's locked in. Do you have the number in front of you, Judd? Is it 575, 6 million? That really is Colomay getting that sort of money on the open market this winter, if there is an open market? Probably not.
No.
So, like, you could make a case one way or another. The Colomay side should exercise their portion of it. Worst case, you get a check for like $1.25 million to go away. So, you know, if I had to bet on how this thing will unfold, this Twins official wouldn't crack and tell me the exact details. But if I had to bet, Twins decline, Colomay, it would make logical sense, exercises so he gets that check to go away.
Interesting.
Also, I caught up with Max Williams, the former Gopher Arizona Cardinals tight end. Caught up with Max for about 20 minutes yesterday. He just got some stitches out. He's 2 weeks removed from his knee surgery. Just so unfortunate. He's a free agent in March. He was playing so well. Remember the great game he had against the Vikings in week two? Suffers that. It's a gruesome injury. I mean, he told me he's only watched it back once. Couldn't watch it back a second time, but that gruesome injury against the 49ers in week five. But he's over at the facility as often as he can be, still trying to stay involved. By the way, he's really close to the Gopher program. Like, even though he didn't play for PJ Fleck, him and PJ text all the time. He sent PJ a nice congratulatory message yesterday.
Very nice. Thank you, sir. We will talk to you for bonus scoops next Tuesday.
Got it. Sounds good, Jed. And National Signing Day for winter sports, college basketball specifically, next Wednesday. So that'll be a big day for all these 2022 recruits, both men and women here in the 2022 high school class in Minnesota. So many good players, men and women. So next Wednesday, November 10th, a big day for college hoops.
Much appreciated, Dukes. Thank you. Talk to
you. Okay, see ya.
All right. That was the scoop with our guy, Doogie Reckless Speculation, on this Reckless Speculation Thursday. And just because Doogie is gone doesn't mean that we are done, Declan Goff.
Oh, no.
Mackie and Judd, we continue with, I guess, what was a lot of fun when it comes to the Reckless Speculation platform and now has finally been resolved. If you have not seen this morning, and we are recording this on Thursday morning, Jack Eichel has finally been traded to the Western Conference. The Vegas Golden Knights get him for Peyton Krebs, Alex Tuch, who of course was part of the Wild until in the expansion draft. And I think it was actually a trade made at that time. Tuch was sent to the Golden Knights, and he's been very good there. Hurt so far this year. A future first-round draft pick and a future second-rounder. Now, so the Golden Knights get what they desperately were in need of, which is not just a good center, but a top one.
Yeah.
The situation is this, though. So now, and this is the crazy thing, that this didn't get done. So now Eichel is going to have the surgery for the herniated disc that he has needed since last year, but the Sabres and the Eichel camp disagreed. And instead of just saying, we're going to trade you, get this done, we had to wait till now. So just going from the story here at ESPN.com, Eichel is expected to be cleared to skate in 6 weeks after the surgery, Declan. but he has a minimum of 3 months until he will be cleared for contact, meaning he will return to the Golden Knights post-Olympic break and certainly add some star power to that team. When you see the parameters of this trade, and the returns are decent good return. One, it's not a bad return. Do you wish that the Wild had been more in on this, or do you agree with the fact, Dex, that basically months ago they apparently backed away and said no thanks?
So I think the interesting part about this trade is you can basically now take this parameters that Vegas gave up and plug it into the Wild. So let's replace, obviously, Alex Tuch with Kevin Fiala. I think that's the easiest comp to make. Peyton Krebs was the top prospect for Vegas 2 years ago, and the jury's still out if he becomes a star, but he's kind of the wild card of that. I mean, Buffalo's taking the chance that he's going to develop into their next superstar. Alex Tuch is a nice player. Alex Tuch is not really a superstar player. He's a very, very good player. Good complimentary player.
I like him a lot, but...
Not a superstar. But they're taking the chance that Peyton Krebs is going to be the next guy, obviously, in Vegas. And then obviously you factor in a couple draft picks as well, including what will be likely a later round pick, because Vegas is obviously a very good team. So the Sabres don't get the initial return, but instead get a solid return for a disgruntled superstar that was never ever going to play for you again, and the marriage was failing. If I'm the Wild and I would have given up Fiala, let's call it Matthew Boldy, and a 2022 first, and that third round pick in 2023, I'm not in love with that idea. I could be talked into that idea, but I lean towards no. I lean towards no. If the buyouts weren't here, and you know, and also, I have no idea how Vegas is going to make this work once he is healthy. And I know the Lightning manipulated the salary cap, but it's going to be almost just as complicated for Vegas to make this work once he's on their active roster and healthy.
Right. So what they did immediately was they moved Mark Stone, who's been out for 7 games, who's very good.
Yeah, very good player.
He's hurt. They moved him to a long-term IR today.
Yep.
And when you do that, the guy comes off your books, mm-hmm. but he has to come back eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the Lightning did, and I don't know why the league allows this, but the league suspends the salary cap entirely in the playoffs. So, if Eichel didn't play until the playoffs, he could come back and play with the entire roster intact, and they wouldn't have to get cap compliant until the summer at some point in time. That's not going to happen. So yes, the problem one is that you're exactly right. The cap, that's problem one. Problem two, Dex, is because this isn't fantasy hockey, because this is not a hockey pool. I still don't know enough about Eichel's personality to feel comfortable just plopping him into my room when, if I'm Bill Guerin, I have worked so hard. You know, I mean, the man has worked hours to subtract people and add the right people. And so if I knew that Eichel was an upstanding, great locker room guy who was the captain in Buffalo, not because he was a superstar, but because he, damn it, deserved it, I'd probably be comfortable trying to make a large impact trade. Not knowing that would make me nervous, because mm-hmm. this guy's expected to come in off surgery, be damn good, and also be good off the ice. So I can't complain about the fact the Wild didn't do this. Now, the one bad thing here is if Eichel goes to the Golden Knights and is as good as the Vegas people expect, he's in your conference now, which is not great, because the one thing that I think the Golden Knights lacked previously, much like the team here, was a top line center. And now they potentially have that. And so I would have much preferred that he stayed in the Eastern Conference. That probably wasn't going to happen. I think by the end, it was down to what? Calgary and the Golden Knights. So mm-hmm. those two teams both in the Western Conference. But I can't complain about the fact that the Wild didn't make a move like this. But playoff wise, it's probably not the best thing to potentially have Jack Eichel in your conference.
And I mean, the Wild are playing well right now. there could still be a situation where you add a center by the deadline or down the road that could make you deeper down there and make you a better offensive team. But if Eichel's also not going to be able to play for a long time, because I know you read the ESPN report, but then I believe John Morosi was saying that he might not even play for 3 to 5 months. You know, like it could be a long time.
That means he walks back into the playoffs and the Golden Knights don't have one concern about being cap compliant. And if that doesn't, after what Tampa pulled with Kucherov, if Vegas pulls the same thing, this league doesn't fix this.
Yeah.
Like what on earth is there a compelling case to say everybody must be cap compliant until the most important time of the year, at which point in time anything goes, go ahead and trade for Gretzky.
Right.
Explain that to me.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So the Stanley Cup playoffs also would start May 2nd. So that is literally right on time with him. He'd basically be healthy right before, right around the start of the NHL postseason, it'd be Kucherov 2.0, but in Vegas. And also, Vegas is probably going to have to shed other players to make this work. So,
they will. Yes,
it's
eventually they will for sure.
It's going to be
the problem.
It's a gamble by Vegas, pun intended. But they've shown that they're willing to take risks and take big chances like this, and good for them. I think that's awesome. I know Wild fans are all irked by Vegas because of the first round playoff series for whatever reason. I love watching Vegas. Vegas is irked by the referees in Vegas for whatever reason.
I didn't even know that. Crap
out of me because it's hockey.
Where?
Yeah, on hockey. Yeah, on Twitter.
Oh, well,
Twitter's
going to be Twitter.
Cesspool.
But every day, I love it.
But in general, you know, the Wild are playing well right now, and I don't think I would have been able to do that trade if it was, you know, Fiala, Boldy first. I like Fiala too much. Eichel makes too much of money. I mean, and look, Eichel healthy is a much more impactful player than Kevin Fiala. That's obvious. No one's going to debate that. But I think just with the timetable of the surgery, yes, you also bring up the chemistry, possible chemistry issues in the room. It would have been a pretty complicated. And the Wild, look, at the beginning of the summer, were arguably the favorites to get him. They were showing the most interest. A lot of people literally thought it was going to be the Minnesota Wild that end up pulling off this trade. And now they don't, and they're going to roll with this group. And honestly, I'm okay with that.
In fact, I saw your guy Fiala last night at the Wolves game.
Oh, was he?
He and I think it's still his. I don't think they're married yet. I think it's his
gal,
fiance.
Yeah.
Where his gal were at the game. He stayed for the entire thing. I was very impressed. I thought that. I thought he's here for like a quarter or so. But no, yeah, I'm with you. If you have to play the Golden Knights in the playoffs, it's probably going to be a pain. Eichel's very good, but I think that there's enough unknowns about him, including the fact that I think he's about to have a procedure that we can't find a precedent for in hockey. And he got hurt. If you go back and watch the play, they were playing the Islanders, and he got hurt on a really innocuous hit, too. So, like, if he takes that hit again, is that going to be a problem? So, all right, we are done. Phil traveling today for the portion of Mackie and Judd, so he will be back tomorrow. Dex, go ahead.
Quickly, an ode to Marian Gaborik, who is officially retiring. He has officially announced his retirement today, November 4th, 2021. He was basically,
are you serious?
He's been out for the last year and a half. But yes, he is officially retiring.
I feel like
from the game.
For like 3 years, Dex.
I know. I think he was still thinking about maybe coming back. But Marian Gaborik, you know, this was the guy for me that made me fall in love with hockey, because he obviously came around when the Wild came in and I was 8 years old. So Marian Gaborik finally hanging up 1,000 games, won a cup obviously with the Kings, but also to be honest a big what if, man. I mean, the guy, really just looking quickly up and down his box score, outside of his first 3 years in the league when he played 70 plus games, only played 70 more games twice. Yep. Twice, from the ages of 20 years old to when he retired in 35. He was just never healthy, unfortunately.
Two questions off of his career. Okay. One is exactly what you just said, injuries. What if he does not get hurt? And then he was, what, didn't he have a groin at one point that kept flaring?
It was the groin that was,
reoccurring, and it's like he'd be scratched. And the other what if, and this is not Jacques' fault, but what if Marian Gaborik had played in today's game?
Oh.
And remember, he played for a coach who was bound and determined to milk every last point from an expansion team. he's still got a ton of points. But Jacques Lemaire would get frustrated with him, you know, because he wouldn't defensively be responsible. And he stepped into an era. He was drafted in, I think, Declan, what you could argue pretty coherently is the worst era of hockey since I was born.
Yeah.
So I turn 52 next week. The game, look, when I started to watch the game, it certainly didn't come close to being as fast as it was today. But the 80s featured, I mean, look at the scores, 7-6, 6-5, 8-7. So it didn't feature the speed and the athletes that it has today, but it certainly had exciting, wide open games. I remember vividly going to the Wild's first season. And I was like, this is as, you know, for this sport, which by the way, just, it, you know, is an exciting sport. This is as boring as it gets. And there was a guy who came down at the time from Winnipeg a lot, columnist from the Sun. And I was talking to him, his name is Scott. And I'm like, Scott, what's happened here? Like, this is awful. And he's like, you are used to the 21 team league where it was wide open and exciting and fun. We are now in the day and age of the trap. We are now in the, you know, everything that could be wrong. And the last, if you go back to the last Stanley Cup final before the lockout, which was Tampa and Tortorella's team over the Flames, that was unwatchable hockey.
Yep.
That was, and Gabrick was right in there in his prime. What happens if Gabrick steps into the game Kaprizov has?
Yeah.
As far as being unleashed and with his offensive skills, he would have been so much fun to watch now.
Yeah, I mean, Gabby was a flashy player, probably one of the quickest, not necessarily the fastest, one of the quickest hockey players around from the last 10, 15 years, and shot the puck a ton. I mean, was an exciting player to watch. Yeah, it kind of is unfortunate that he never stayed healthy and never got to 1,000 points. He just got over 1,000 games, which is, I mean, when you play 17 years in the NHL, you should be a lock in to get over, well over 1,000 games. But he kind of had to crawl to get there because by the time he got to New York, I mean, he was a shell of himself. He was awesome with that Kings run in 2014. I mean, he led the team in goals that year, 14 postseason goals in 26 games, and they won their cup. And in general, a clutch performer. I think that's what I remember the most about Gabrick is was a clutch, big-time performer. You needed a big goal, Gabrick was going to deliver that. To me, and I know there's probably a good faction of Wild fans, and I think you'd agree with this, by the way, to me, Miran Gavrik means more to the Wild than Mikko Koivu does. He does. To me, he does.
Because he was a star player.
Because he was a star player. Now,
star talent, yeah.
Koivu was the full-time captain, was more decorated, and spent more time here. I don't deny that. But to me, when I think Wild hockey, I don't think Mikko Koivu. He's not the first person I think of him. He's not the first person that comes up. If you ask me who's the first person you think of when you think Minnesota Wild hockey, I will always say Miran Gavrik. Easily.
That's very fair. Yep, yep. And if he came into the league today, he'd be so much fun.
I agree.
It would be so much fun because thank God they changed the rules. All right, Dex.
All right, man.
Before we go, plug stuff. We got, I'm sure we got stuff to plug as far as our podcasts go and what's coming up.
Yeah, we have we have Keys. Our guy Keys will be making his edition, obviously, tomorrow for Mackie and Judd edition. We have four question. Here's my keys. We have four question Friday, obviously on Purple Daily. Uh-huh. You and I, should we do a hockey show maybe tomorrow or something? I mean, I hate these off days.
I hate the stagger.
It makes content tough to do. And I know obviously people love Judd's hockey show.
Play on Thursday, play tonight, right?
Yeah, for God's sake.
Like play Tuesday, Thursday, play Saturday. Don't play Sunday.
I did a story, I think three or four years ago when I was working for Go Radio and being a Polad pocket protector. I remember contacting Aaron Sickman to wonder, because this happens also, this is not a new thing. Every year in October, the Wild are barely at home and I have so many off days. So I did a story and Sickman helped me out. The XL Energy Center is legitimately one of the busiest arenas in North America in October and March specifically. And once they get the schedule that they say, hey, there's events and concerts here, so we can't have games here. But then you have to factor in the NHL. And you have to factor in how many back-to-backs. It basically leaves this humongous problem in October that the Wild have next to no home games in October and in March, because then the state hockey tournaments for the boys and girls.
Get Harry Styles out of here and get some hockey going, okay? No more Harry. We don't need Harry Styles at the X.
I agree. But for all of our listeners, thank you. Yeah, rate, subscribe, like for all Minnesota Wild, Twins, Timberwolves content right here. Our Purple Daily YouTube page with 7 days a week Minnesota Vikings content. We'll have Ventline obviously rolling on Sunday after the Ravens game when Lamar Jackson torches you, but that's a different story. Do all that. Rate, like, subscribe.
And on that, we will talk to you tomorrow on Mackie and Judd.